Chapter 15, Mexico. For many years, been running down there, you know, starting way back in the 60s. We used to have those rum runs with Jerry and Penny and I and the kids would run down to Nogales. In those days, you could bring back a Dama Juana, which is 4/5 of a gallon of any kind you wanted, and a gallon for everybody, including the little kids. Lyndon Johnson finally put the kibosh on that. But it was one time we did have a big family get together down in San Carlos Bay near Nogales. And remember, the fishing was extraordinary. We had a great time out there fishing. And it wasn't deep sea fishing, just we caught mackerel and skipjack, I think. One of the best meals I ever had in my life, fish meals, was this grubby little cook, Mexican cook back there behind us, and in a little galley down in there. He cooked up a whole bunch of that fish we just caught and then slid it on paper plates down the ways between us, and you just pick it up hot and eat it with your hands. Man, that was good. I remember one time we went out to a bar around the bay from Nogales, and they walked into this place, and it had a sign there. I hope Bruce remembers this one. It said, "The best wine is the free." We had a good laugh about that, and I've always remembered that. And so I always, you know, I can change that around too. You know, the best rum is the free, the best beer is the free. One time I went down there with Mom and Hal. We met Gib and Patty Grill in Mazatlan and went deep sea fishing. And it was amazing. We were only out there about 3 hours, I think, and we caught, I think it was 7 sailfish, 4 of which we were required to return back. They would tag them, though, and you'd fill out some information, you know, your name and address and stuff like that. And then it was a cooperation between the Mexican and the American fisheries. If they're ever caught again, they'd notify you. I remember Mom, when it was her turn, they hooked one, and she sat in the fisherman's chair, and she worked with it about 5 minutes. She said, "Roger, take this thing." And I grabbed the pole, and I landed the fish. You know, it takes about a half an hour to land those guys. And Mom had black and blue marks on the backside of her calves from where she'd been clenching the back. The rung of the chair. About 2 years later, after that, I did get a postcard in the mail from U.S. Fisheries saying that one of those sailfish that I caught had been hooked again off of Australia. Man, they get around. There's just that one time we were there with the family that I was just referring to. We really got loaded that night and eating our own fish, I think, in the restaurant. And they kept playing this song, Cucurucuru Paloma. Well, Paloma is a dove. And Dan and I chipped in real loud. Right? You know, Cucurucuru Paloma. So I'd say about 10 years after that, he and I, when he was at Oxnard Air Force Base and I was in L.A., we decided to take a week down in Baja, California. Just say, hell of it, went dove down there. You know, went through Tijuana and on down to Ensenada. In fact, we went down a little bit below there. But we spent most of the time in Ensenada. And but on the way down, we pulled into a cliffside bar. It was just hanging on this cliff. You look straight down the cliff at the ocean. It was a beautiful sight. And we were having a drink in there, and all of a sudden behind us it goes, "Cuckoo, cuckoo," real loud, and we turn around and look, and here's a couple of cages with those big Paloma doves in there. So we got a good laugh out of that. You know, eventually, the Gib and Patty Grill used to come by and stay with us on Friar Drive in Phoenix, and at some point, maybe about their fourth trip or something, we'd all sit out there in the dining room bar and pound them down. And Gib looks at me and he says, why the hell don't you retire and come on down to Mexico with us? He says, what are you going to do, die behind your desk? So that got me thinking. We'd already spent every available vacation down there in Acapulco, and we never had a better time than we had with the grills down there. And they showed us everything. It's a beautiful place. And so it took me about 3 years to figure out how to retire early. Near the end of this, I got it pretty well handled. One night we were drinking, and Rosa, as she's leaving and going into the kitchen, told me that I didn't have the balls to figure it out. So that was a bit of a challenge. I thought I had it already figured out anyway. And eventually, you know, we sold everything we had. It took a while. We put the house up for sale in March of 1988 and had two people look at it between March and November, I think it was. So this is really a downtime in the market. And but the second group who looked at it in November bought it, and we closed in January. And we had some trouble getting it closed and getting our check in time. But I made such a stink to this real estate lady that I just decided I couldn't stand her anyway. But she told me we couldn't get the check to Monday, and I said, "Hey, we've already changed our dates of leaving and reservations twice. We're not doing it again." So she finally managed to get the check out of them and get it over to us. Just prior to doing that, we had our fourth and last yard sale, and somebody stole Rosa's purse, pocketbook. So we had to cancel all the credit cards we had. I don't know how many, not that many, but we had to cancel whatever we had. It was strictly a cash basis when we moved down to Mexico. The Grills found a place in their building to buy. I think we paid $22,000 for it, furnished. It wasn't furnished very nicely, though, but it was okay. And we sold it, about 8 years later for, I think it was $54,000. So it was a good investment. And it's a beautiful place. We overlooked Acapulco Bay. Had $1 million sunset every night. We took twin beds out of the front bedroom, and ordered a bar from this place down on the Costera. And I think they made it up in Guanajuato, more in the center of the country. So it was, you know, it was rustic-looking bar. They brought it down there in three pieces. Our condo was two floors down from the parking lot area. It was on a side of a mountain, so first floor was two floors down. Gib and Patty lived on the parking lot level, which was floor number three. Anyway, they brought this thing down and this bar down in three pieces, and that the back bar, the front bar, and the top. They got the back bar and the front and the top in okay, but they couldn't get the front bar because of a foot rail there. They said they'd have to send somebody. They knocked it off. It was a wooden rail. They knocked it off and said they'd send somebody to fix it. And I said, "Forget it. I'll fix it myself," which I did. That wasn't a big deal. So we had a beautiful bar there, and we eventually had a christening with our neighbors across the way from us. They were Mexican, but he was actually Italian. He said his father came to Mexico City just after the war and opened the first pizzeria in Mexico City. And then he married one of these. There's a big German settlement in northern Mexico. And he married one of those women from up there. And on the sly, he called her Brunhilde. He said, in fact, he told me she was Hitler's daughter, he said. But anyway, we had this christening. We can't speak very much Spanish. They can't speak very much English. They speak in some Italian and some German. But we managed to have a really good time. And at the end of it, I got what the Americans call the dreaded abrazo. That's the embrace. So Carlos grabbed a hold of me and gave me a hug. I don't think he was ever going to let go, you know. After a while, it gets pretty embarrassing. But they just keep on hugging in Mexico. But they're good people. We we did a lot of work inside there. In fact, we got a plumber to come in and put in some stuff, put in a new vanity in the bathroom and the plumbing on it. And we left him alone in there, which was a mistake, because he took all those beautiful towels that Rosa had hanging in there and used most of them to clean up this work. You know how plumbing stuff looks like. So it was all black and that. And well, it reminds me of an old joke, but they just ain't got no coos down there, some of those people. We didn't have a doorbell. Couldn't figure out why we didn't have a doorbell. And we had a lot of deliveries coming, and so we always had to wait upstairs or have somebody run down and tell us that what we wanted was delivered. So the day guy that worked there, I asked him about electricians. Oh, yeah, I got a cousin who's an electrician. So this cousin showed up and with a helper, and it took him 2 days to get our doorbell to work. They still didn't charge us hardly any money, you know, but it was so fun. Then I found out why we didn't have a doorbell, because people that came up who were new to that area and we wanted to see somebody in these buildings, there was 12 condos, 6 on one side of the stairwell and 6 on the other. And so they had punched the first bell up there, which was ours, right, 101. Well, actually, they're standing there right at 301 almost, but there's a door that somebody has to attend to because you can't get in. It was a security door. So our damn doorbell rang all the time. I really got sick of it. But we did have it in case somebody was delivering something. One night we came back from out partying and having dinner and walked in. We had sort of an atrium off the bedroom. They call it an atrium. It was just sort of an air shaft. It had a sliding door, kind of like a bathroom, a shower door, that you could step over a ledge and out to that. And we kept our grill out there, charcoal grill. And there was a few other things like a wash tub and stuff. And come home, we hear a lot of scratch. We keep a curtain over the door. Here's scratch, 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 scratch. And open the curtain, look down, and here's an armadillo. He's falling down the air shaft. So, yeah. So I remember somewhere that said if you hit an armadillo with a stick, they'll curl up in a ball, and that's a bunch of BS. I got a broom handle, whack him, and nothing. He never. He just scurried around down under that cement tub that was built in, scrub tub, and got in the corner back in there. And finally, I had to give up. Rosa kept throwing lettuce in there, figuring that's what he was going to eat. I don't think he touched a bit of it. The next day, I see the day guy, a real nice, real handsome black Mexican. And that's another story. But there's supposed to be a shipload of black slaves back in the slavery days who took over the boat and ran into the ground about 100 miles south of Acapulco, you know, back in the 1800s. And they just lived there. So that's where this kid was from. And I told him, tenemos un problema. He says, what's your problem? You know, que problema? And I said, tenemos un armadillo. Oh, okay. So he comes down there. He opens that sliding door into the atrium, and he sneaks in. The thing's sleeping. And he grabbed that thing by the tail and held on to it. And it just spun around like a crazy thing, you know, like a top, spinning around trying to get free of him. And I finally gave up. He took it out of there. I gave him a couple of pesos and took it up. And as he's walking by the next condo building, his sister worked up there. And she stuck her head out the window and yelled down to him. And he holds up the armadillo. And they had that for supper that night. Another time we're having a refrigerator delivered. We went down about the best refrigerator we could in town. And we wanted one of the side-by-side with a lot of ice space, because you'd want to stock up on ice, especially in Samanta Sana, Holy Week. And Holy Week, the Mexicans from Mexico City descend upon Acapulco, and you can't find a piece of ice anywhere. Anyway, when it finally comes to delivering this thing, I thought they'd dolly it down, you know. So they told us that they ran a guy down and told us that they're going to bring it down. And so we waited down there, and here, scrape, thump, scrape, thump, scrape, thump, scrape, thump. I said, what the heck? Is that a dolly that's scraping? Scrape, thump, scrape, thump. Finally, the guy, the refrigerator comes into view, and they got a very stocky guy and about 50 years old. He's carrying it down. Can you imagine carrying a refrigerator, a big refrigerator down? He did it all the way down. And he was strong, but I don't know how many years he'd be able to do that. He was in his 50s already. I slipped him several pesos because that was impressive. We used to walk our dogs around there. We had a couple of dogs. And one was a big old English sheepdog. And used to go down the hill. There's a place some squatters moved into. It was a place that I can't remember the name of it now, that was designed after a Hollywood movie star's place in Hollywood. And it was impressive beginnings to it, and then it had to be abandoned. And they lived up there on top of the abandoned part. And this Mexican lady had a big dog that was loose. And that dog used to charge across the street at me and Sancho. So, to be on the careful side, I took a walking stick with me, defend ourselves from this big dog. And next thing I know, when I go down that way, she stood there on her side of the street, whistled at me, and I looked over there, and she reaches into her bodice and pulls out a huge butcher knife. To threaten me to leave her dog alone. Well, hell, I didn't want to have anything to do with her dog in the first place. So I yelled across the street. I said, loca, loca, loca. I told her she was crazy. I don't suppose that really helped anything out, you know. Back when we first started driving down to Mexico City, we went to... We had a whole bunch of stuff in the van. Go down to Nogales. We go down to Mariposa exit, which is the commercial one. And then we got to deal with aduana on the other side, you know, the customs on Mexican side, and hit an impasse. I never met a guy in Mexico who wouldn't take a bribe until that day. Had a aduana captain there, real nice guy, but he didn't like all the stuff we were bringing in. And I tried to bribe him, I think, with 50 or 100 bucks, and still wouldn't let us bring it in. So we had to turn around, go back into Nogales, rent a rental thing, a rental space, dump a bunch of this stuff up there, and then come back down and see him again. And then he still didn't want, I had a new vanity that we were going to put in, that we did put in Mexico. He didn't want that down there, but he did finally wave me on. So we got out of there. By the time we got down to Mexico City, a couple of days later, I'm driving along. I know I got to find this freeway to get around it, really, and I missed the turn. So now we're lost in Mexico City for 3.5 hours, and we're right downtown on a Reforma and Insurgentes, these huge avenues with all the traffic and stuff. Had a mini bus that smacked into one of our side mirrors. It was so close together down there. Bent the side mirror, but didn't kill it. And we're just moving along down there, and pretty soon here's a motorcycle cop with a whistle. Tweet, tweet, and he points to the curb, and the curb was a bus bay, so I pulled in there. And he wanted to know where we were going. I told him Cuernavaca that day, Acapulco, eventually. And he wanted to see what was in the camioneta, the van. La carga. We call cargo. They call carga. So I opened the back of the van. He looked at all that stuff in there. He said, demasiado carga, too much cargo. Follow me to the Edificio de Aduana, the customs building. So I tried to give him a 5,000 peso note, which was worth about $5, and he, no, there's a whole bunch of people in the bus bay standing there watching this going on, so follow him. So okay, he takes off down the street, and we're following him for a while, about a block or so, and then he quickly goes over to the curb and lays his bike down and shows me, tells me to, you know, to pull over, stop. He runs back and sticks his hand in the window. I slapped that 5,000 peso note on and we were on our way. We're still lost, though. And maybe an hour later, another cop stopped me. We were down on Insurgente Sur, South Insurgentes Avenue. And he wanted to know where we were going. And I said, Cuernavaca. I said, which way to Cuernavaca? He says, derecha, straight ahead. Derecha. So we went straight down Insurgentes. Eventually, we got down to Cuernavaca. We had a whole bunch of glassware, stemware and stuff we're going to put in this bar we haven't built, you know, and we go over these topis, they're called, or speed humps. Well, in the dark down there in Cuernavaca, went over one topi too many, and we could hear all that glasswork going up in the van and down. We could hear a breaking deck in there. And I was looking for El Presidente Hotel, couldn't find it, and finally pulled over to a drugstore. And there was a line of people. There was open door drugstore, and I got in line, and there was a younger fellow in front of me, and I asked him if he habla inglés. You know, he speak English. Sí, señor. So I said, well, we're looking for the Presidente Hotel. He says, well, let me just make my purchase here, and I'll follow me, and I'll show you where it's at. So we did, and we get up there, and we're driving way up in the mountains or hills around Cuernavaca. And we go up this one street, and it's blocked. There's a landslide or something up there. So he stops. He comes back to the van. He says, I'm really sorry, Senor. I didn't know there was this landslide up here. We'll turn around. We'll find another way. And eventually we did. We got up to the El Presidente. It was a marvelous hotel. And He really didn't want to take any money from him, but I forced $5 on him, I think. Gave me a business card. He's in the air conditioning business. And I said, where'd you learn that? He says, in Houston. So I asked him, I said, mojado, you know, wetback. He said, see, but he'd been in Houston long enough to learn some English in the air conditioning business, and he came back down to Cuernavaca and opened his own. Really, really nice people. And we took one look. We're heading up the stairs into the El Presidente, and there's people coming out in ball gowns and tuxedos and stuff. We're wearing jeans. So we checked in. We got up in our room, and we ordered cheeseburgers, you know, from the kitchen. And we called ourselves the Butlery Hillbillies when we moved into that place. It was we didn't want to go out and stand around in our jeans around those people with the tuxedos on. Go back and forth. We had to come back about every 6 months to renew our tourist visas. We had one route that we had in there with it we had an easy day and then a real short day and a real long day. So we tried to find something more in the middle. And we went by this motel in this one desert town, and it looked decent. So we tried it out. And as I'm checking in, I asked them if they have any aire acondicionado, that's, you know, air conditioning. And no, senor. Okay, well, it was hot. It was summertime out in the desert. Well, we'll make out, you know. So they gave us a room. It was way around in the back. And, in fact, they look across a big field back in there. And then it had no cross ventilation. They had no fans. We had a little heater that had a fan setting, so you could put that on. So that's the only air that was moving in there, and it wasn't moving very much. Rosa went into the shower and eventually with a sheet draped around her, and she got the sheet all soft and wet and came back and flopped on their bed. I don't think I got an hour's sleep, you know. And people were walking by. There was a light outside, and we could see people walking by the window all the time. And we came to call this the Son of the Bates Motel. You know, I could see this us in that van buried out in the middle of that desert field sometimes. So as soon as it hit, got daybreak, we cut out of there and never went back. But we brought up the Son of the Bates Motel a lot of times. There's millions of stories, of course, about Acapulco, and it's a beautiful city. We had terrible luck. We lost two pups down there to rat poisoning, and so, you know, it was the best of times and it was the worst of times, the old Tale of Two Cities type thing. But all in all, it was a wonderful experience, and I don't regret it at all. Overall, we did come back to the States eventually. We had to keep coming back for Andy's operations and stuff, and then finally it got so, you know, I told Rosa, well, we can't afford two places. We can't afford to be, and we come back to Phoenix because she'd go back to work as a medical transcriber. When she's pushing me so hard to quit the job, I told her, I said, you know, when I quit my job, I can't go back to WAL. I'm done. But if you quit your job, you can go work anywhere because you got a trade. She was a very good medical transcriber. So, yeah, she'd say, you know. So eventually that's what happened. And we'd come back and she'd work for a while at this. She didn't have to go to the hospital again, though. She hated a good Sam hospital with a passion after 20-some years. That's what she really wanted out of. It's the old saying is, you're supposed to retire to something, not from something. Well, I retired to coping with Mexico, and she retired from Good Sam Hospital. At 3 months, she was bored down in Mexico, basically. So that was the beginning of the end, all Andy's problems. And actually, it cost us money, too. I spent that 3 years figuring all the angles on retirement, and I never once did I think we'd have to support Andy and the kids. We thought we were beyond that. We'd already done some of that, and we thought we were done. And she had four teenage kids when all this started. Fortunately, by the time she died, even the youngest one was married, so we didn't have that problem. And one kind of final note about Mexico. When I first went to work in Phoenix, the public finance on Van Buren, there was a guy working in there by the name of Dennis Killip. He was a bit of a jerk, really. Nobody really liked him much. And he had some problem proving that he was a graduate from high school somewhere. I remember he had that problem. But he came a Christmas bonus, and the basic Christmas bonus was $7.50, and that's all he got. And he thought he'd been there longer and he deserved better, which is, he probably did. I don't know. He went to my boss, Bill Gilbert, and said he didn't get a bigger bonus. He was leaving, and Bill just told me, oh, pack, clean out your desk, you're done. And about, that would be 1960, and I think about 5 years ago, I did bump into him once in a bank. I think it was the First National Bank in downtown Phoenix. So I saw him working back in there. But I never saw him again. And I pick up the newspaper, and it says, American killed and murdered in Mexico. Look down, Dennis Killip, retired, said Phoenix bus driver, was strangled for his TV set down there. He was a jerk, but he didn't deserve that. We did have some exciting driving down there. On one occasion, we were going around a big, wide turn in central Mexico somewhere, and come around the bend, and here's flashing lights, you know, of police vehicles. A bunch of guys standing out there, I'd say about a half a dozen with machine pistols, Uzis or something, and they flagged us down into the ditch. It was one of those rare places in Mexico where you had a flat sort of ditch you could drive into. And we drove down in there, and then one of them walked over to me, and he wanted to know where we're going, and I told him, Phoenix to Acapulco, and he says, oh, Acapulco, beautiful city, he says. Andale, drive on. So we were glad to get out of there. One time we this bus riding down in there in the early days, and between Mexico City and Acapulco, and the bus stops and everybody gets off and says, what's this all about? And just one gal went by and spoke to us in English. She says, "You must get out." So we got out and stand out there. And then this, these buses had hostesses. So the hostesses were bilingual. So as we're getting back on eventually, when we got off, then a whole bunch of soldiers got on, a lieutenant and a bunch of privates. And then they came on out and walked off. So I asked her what that's all. She says, "Well, they're looking for guns and drugs, and maybe you got some." I said, "No, don't even kid about it. We don't have any." Another time we went down the coast route with two pups in tow. There were two Welsh Corgi pups, and we get into Puerto Vallarta, and I had a guy that said the downtown hotel in Puerto Vallarta will take animals. So I go down there, and then they got a no animales permite sign. I said, "Oh, well, forget that." And I go out and ask a cab driver. I said, "Where can we, you know, where we can get pets?" He says, I did this in quite a few situations. You get a cab driver and have him drive you, lead you to where you want to go. And so he led us to this place, and it was a nice hotel. And I told the girls we had these puppies, you know, and she said, "Well, what size were they?" I said, "Oh, chiquitas, you know, little ones." She said, "They wanted to see them, so I went and brought them in, and they're old and auto, and they're really cute pups." I said, "Okay," and they gave us a real nice suite, had a wet bar, beautiful, what they call that furniture? Well, anyway, it's a beautiful wooden furniture, and so we go to bed that night and wake up in the morning, and those little devils have been chewing on the rungs of those, of the chairs and the table, and that all chewed up, all that beautiful furniture. We beat a hasty retreat out of there. And later on, we're down maybe towards more towards Manzanillo, and we pull into a place, and we didn't even bother to bring up the fact that we had some pups. We just grabbed them and ran them into the bathroom of this motel-like place. And then we unloaded the car and everything. And we got back in and opened the door of the bathroom, and these little devils had dug almost halfway through the bathroom wall underneath the sink. That's another place we beat a hasty retreat out the next day, keeping an eye on the rearview mirror to see if any cops are after us. Yeah. Further on down on that trip, I think it was a Utah or Nevada plated van shot by us, and the back doors are banging open on a van, and you see guys sitting in there with rifles. And then we'd lose it, and then we go through a little town. We come out of that little town, go down, and we'd be going down somewhere, and it passed us again. So finally, it was in front of us pulling into this town, and there was a big outdoor restaurant on the right. And the driver stuck his hands out the window to show us, tell us to slow down and stop, and which we did. And they opened all the doors, and they come piling out of there with all the guns. They went running into this open-air restaurant, and you should have seen everybody in there jumped up and got their hands up in the air. We concluded that they were drug agents looking for drugs and drug dealers. But we got out of there in a hurry, too. We got around them and took off. We ended up hanging out in a bar in Acapulco. It wasn't on the tourist strip. It was up off of it about a block or two. So the clientele in there was mostly Acapulqueños, but they could be some tourists too. And we made very good friends with the head waiter in there, Gerardo. And this place was just loaded with different kinds of characters, one of which was a guy who looked like a taller version of Walter Houston in the Treasure of the Sierra Madre. And in fact, he was a gold miner. So at one point, when we knew him, he showed up with this big map, big topographical map, showed us exactly where the mine he was working. It was about 100 miles, I think, northwest of Acapulco, way up in there somewhere. And He would bring down this mountain mezcal. It's just pure, looked like gin or vodka, just see right through it. Oh, that stuff was potent. He passed that bottle around. There wasn't a sober guy at the table. We used to we have a tradition of Christmas dinner there, and maybe even Thanksgiving dinner too. But anyway, Christmas dinner, and for sure, and we invited a bunch of people over there. One of which is a guy named Tony Masala, and Tony always showed up with a girl on either arm and six bottles of wine, three red and three white. Tony was supposed to be a retired mafia. He said he was an insurance agent from Canada. But one time he told me, we became very close friends, you know, and he said, he told us that if Rose and I were ever in Atlantic City, he has an apartment there, and we can use it anytime we wanted, you know. So we used to have a good time with that. Gib got in kind of a hassle with him because Gib was nasty about him being a retired mafia. But nothing serious ever came of it. When we sold that place, I think about a year later, we came back down, or 2 years later maybe, to take a cruise out of there. And we stayed in a hotel downtown, but we ended up in our favorite bar or restaurant and saw a bunch of our old friends again. And they said, you know, it hadn't been the same since we left. He said, one of the guys said, at Christmas time, we grabbed a cab and went all the way up to where we lived up there. It was a pretty good drive away from where we were. Get all the way up there, and we stood out in front of your place and toasted you, he says. And so I guess we were missed. We were fortunate enough to sell this condo to a friend. There was an American lady who lived right above us, and it was a friend of hers. And her name is Maria Pickford. So many of you may know of Mary Pickford of movie fame. So I don't know how. She's sort of a mysterious person. I don't know her. Mujer Misteriosa, I call her. So I don't know how she got that name of Pickford, but she did live in Canada for a while, and perhaps she was married to a Pickford up there. But she was a very nice lady, and we had no trouble at all selling the thing for the price we wanted, and we had it was sorry to see it. I came down all alone, I drove all the way alone from Phoenix because Rosa was working, so all the way down to Acapulco and loaded up the van with all I could and took it back up. Had trouble getting through customs into the United States. There was so much stuff in there, and the guy was unhappy we had so much stuff. It was a busy day, and he finally waved me through. Just lucky, I guess. You know.